What's up? It's your boy's Jordan and Abraham. As always, he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. And I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. Now, before we hop into the chapter this week, if you're listening on Spotify, please take a moment to rate us 5 stars. Feel
Five
free to reach
stars.
out to us at our YouTube page, Friends Who Read One Piece, or on Twitter at FWROP Pod. We look forward to hearing from you. Now, Jordan, you promised last week, you promised me that we would get an emo reveal. You told me, Abraham, listen, I speak Japanese. I know Japanese. And in Japanese, there's this number wordplay thing about 1116, where 16 can be read as emu. So in 1116, we're going to get a face reveal for emu.
I said
Let
maybe.
me.
I said maybe a face reveal. I said I just want to, I really like how you took what I thought was going to be a fun little make a diss about Jordan having made this prediction, and you came and you made it about my Japanese again, man. You made it about my Japanese again. You said you came and you said this is about Jordan. You say you speak Japanese, and because of
No,
your
you're
understanding
not.
of Japanese, I do, and that means I understand these word plays. But I think you say I've been talking about 1160 this whole time. The 1160s that have a 16 in the middle, not at the end, they have a 16 in the middle. Those are the ones that we're going to be finding out a lot about Emu.
You've seen, the thing that I love the most is I didn't even have to prompt this. Both Josh and Joaquin flaming you in the group chat for this shit. I
Bro.
didn't even have to say
Bro,
anything. We were just in lockstep
I've been
on this
talking about
issue.
1160 this whole time, bro. What are you talking about?
Actually, I'm gonna just leave it at that because I don't want to take
Bro,
up this whole
that's just
episode.
my St. Louis accent, bro. Because I said 60, but it's like you thought I said 16. You haven't got used to it yet, man. You haven't got used to
I'm gonna let it live.
it.
1160 is gonna come and go, and I'm sure nothing is gonna happen. But you know what? This is just I don't want to monopolize the whole episode talking about these BS number theories that people love.
It's in the SBS, bro. I'm coming with SBS next time. I didn't even do research like I should have. I'm coming next time.
Why don't you tell me what happened this week? What Give me a rundown of some of the stuff we did see, given that we didn't see Emu's face.
Yes, this is true. We did not see Emu's face, but the chapter kicks off with scenes of the world reacting to Vegapunk's revelation about the ancient weapons and ongoing war, asking, how could an 800-year war be ongoing in total secrecy when no one is even alive anymore? We see Emu, well, we do see Emu, just like we did the last few chapters. The last few chapters. Walking across the room they're in and standing in front of a painting of a woman who looks just like the princess of Alabasta, Nefertiti Vivi.
Yeah, so I don't know about you, but I've seen a lot of speculation online that Emu and Lily are one and the same. That quote unquote Lily betrayed the world government and Emu and them, but somehow that Lily and Emu are one and the same person. I personally don't really buy this theory all that much, but it is possible because I think Cobra said in his speech that like Lily disappeared or something like that. So I don't know. What do you think? How realistic do you think it is that Emu is Lily?
I agree with you. I think the idea of Emu being Lily seems a little bit far-fetched, especially given that, like, why would you sit in here being just be looking at a poster of yourself? Well, assuming that that is Lily, right? Like, it is a picture of Vivi, and I think we're also just making the connection. It is a picture that looks like Vivi, and I think we're making the connection
Fair,
that these
fair,
two
fair.
characters look very similar to each other. But definitely the idea that if, I mean, the idea that it could be a photo, a portrait of Vivi, and Emu is just like potentially looking down the whole time because she is Lily looking down at her great, 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 great Great granddaughter definitely seems possible. But I still don't think it's likely. To me, what feels closer to it feels more interesting, given that we've learned so much about clones, Stussy's become a really interesting figure in this arc, learning that she's an actual clone of Buckingham Stussy of the Whitebeard Pirates and fake Whitebeard Edward Weevil, the bastard son of Whitebeard's mother. I'm really interested in the idea that there's some sort of potential clone that has recently been born in terms of Vivi. I know last time I was talking as well about, we're talking a little bit about the mermaid princess and, how could she just like be born at a certain point if it's some sort of technology? And there could be something really interesting here about a couple of these princesses being born around the same time who seem to be really important characters, maybe who are even clones or certainly very resemblant of people who lived many, many years ago.
Yeah, I think that's an interest. I never thought about that. I am not really all that on board with this idea of there being a Vivi clone. I feel like it would really come out of left field.
A Lily
And
clone, but
honestly,
Vivi's a Lily clone, right?
that Vivi, yeah, sure, that Vivi is a
Yeah,
Lily
yeah, yeah.
clone. I think that's just, oh, they're related. So Oda's, making it very clear that they look like one another. Like, I think Olvia and Robin also look pretty like. Olvia has white hair and Robin has black hair, but other than that, they basically look the same, right?
They do look pretty
So
similar.
I think that would be a bit of a stretch. One thing I want to say about the Emu Lily stuff, before we move on, is just that another reason I don't believe that Emu would be Lily is that I don't see Oda making his final one of his final villains a female character, especially if it's someone like Luffy that's going to be fighting Emu. Like, I don't think we've ever had Luffy fight a female character in the whole series. So to me, Emu has to be a man. And I think you may have even
And
mentioned at some
Vegapunk,
point
yeah, go ahead,
the
yeah.
pronouns that have been used have described Emu as a man as well. So I don't really think it's Lily, but yeah, what else did we get this chapter, Jordan?
So we get a nice little scene of Stussy asking Edison if she can let Kaku go free, as she and Edison share a heartwarming moment about how this is proof of her humanity. As Vegapunk continues, apologizing to the world that while he's failed to create an energy source to fuel society's development, his research culminated in the Mother Flame, a huge breakthrough that was marred, unfortunately, by the fact that a small portion of it was stolen to power an ancient weapon, the ancient weapon used to erase the Lucia Kingdom from existence. This proves my theory is plausible, he says. The disaster that flooded the world was man-made.
Yeah, again, this to me, this is not something that was a surprise. This is something that we knew about, right? And I feel like we were kind of giving each other a hard time for the last couple of weeks about things that we may both may or may not have said that may or may not have come true. But when I was talking about all those weeks ago about how, hey, the reveal that Vegapunk is going to give, a lot of it is going to be for the people in the One Piece world, not for the viewers, right? It's this kind of stuff. Right, us the readers, we all knew that some weapon in the sky powered by the world government wiped out Lelouchia, right? I think we all speculated that it was an ancient weapon, that it was powered by the Mother Flame, but obviously the citizens of the world did not know that. So I wasn't all that I didn't read that and was like, like NL face kind of thing. It was like, yeah, I know we know this, right? So I wasn't all that shocked by it, but
What I find really interesting is the idea that the Mother Flame, which he is telling us here, was in some ways a failure to create the actual source of energy that he wanted that would actually be able to power the world, only required a small portion of it to actually to be able to power this massive ancient weapon that came through in the sky. I think that gives us a sort of a sense of scale of exactly how much energy this thing has, and it's freaking massive.
yeah.
The idea that only a small portion could actually create that, I think it's really interesting. I think it's really interesting, like wondering truly like how much, like How much energy is there in the One Piece world? It's kind of like a question that I have. And like, what could really become possible? Like, what is it that the whole Mother Flame will make possible if a giant island in the sky that freaking like erases an island and makes things, it makes the sea level go up a whole meter is like a small portion of it?
Yeah, no, I the biggest thing about that is that this is not even the true energy source that Vegapunk is trying to discover, right? Like, if this is some kind of quote unquote knockoff or like, half measure
Right.
that he's managed to
This
achieve, like, yeah, the
is a
scope of what,
small port of the fake
yeah,
one, of the
exactly.
bootleg one.
Yeah, so I, it's, you know, we've we I mean, I've long believed that something like the destruction of the Red Line is going to be really important to the ending of the story and the creation of the All Blue and all of that other stuff. Maybe this is just like the scale of energy that would be needed to destroy something like that, right? Like, if a small piece destroys an island, maybe you just need all of that to destroy the Red Line. I don't know.
Could it also be a source of energy that might be necessary to create the red line?
Yeah.
Curious if that brings anything up for you, that idea.
Yeah, no, it's for real. Like that could, in terms of how the water levels rose in the past, that could be, because the red line, I don't think, is a natural feature of the world. So yeah, that would be a pretty cool explanation. If not, like, we've talked about maybe like an island devil fruit, or like an earth like something like that, and
Right. And I
maybe it
think
just comes down to this energy kind of thing.
because neither of us is really fans of that earth fruit or a devil fruit doing it, right? I don't think, but I think the idea of it being lit, so this is the kind of thing that if there's some kind of like construction or it could really amplify some kind of power that we've seen could really make the creation of some kind of astronomically large, I don't know what you call the red line, it's not an island,
Continent?
but what do you call it? Yeah,
Continent?
continent. Like an astronomically large
I
continent in
think plateau is what you're going for.
the plateau. Yeah, great. Thank you. An astronomically large plateau that runs the entirety of the world. It seems like that's the kind of thing that might necessarily have to come from an ancient weapon being powered, or not necessarily, but something being powered by
For
this
sure.
incredible source of energy. But so, with the mention of the ancient weapons, we see Crocodile, Momonosuke, and Shirahoshi looking on, representative of those weapons and those who seek them. Sengoku eating nervously, and Akainu flaming through some cigars, saying, "You're going to explain everything, Vegapunk." Before we jump to York freaking out that Vegapunk shouldn't have known about her stealing a fragment of the Mother Flame because she cut off memory sync. "You must have known the government's plans," she says. "Otherwise, you wouldn't have done all this or hidden the broadcast snail." Abraham, according to York, the timeline does not add up. What are you seeing here?
Yeah, so York's speech about the timeline and how Vegapunk was able to predict all of this stuff that he shouldn't have been able to predict almost made it made me think of the whatever the time fruit that Hiyori had. Is it Hiyori or Toki that Toki had in freaking Wano, right? Like, we've never seen, because I think Toki dies in the like Odin's backstory or whatever, right? Because she doesn't
Or
send
does
herself,
she?
huh?
Or does she?
Or does she? Yeah, no. So it's like, if you have this person who can, well, I guess she can only travel into the
She can only
future,
travel
not
forward.
travel into the past. But like, it just it's giving this kind of time manipulation reading to me. That's how I kind of, because Vegapunk should not have known that York did all of this if she didn't upload all of her sync all of her memories with the rest of the Vegapunks, right? He like, all of the stuff she's saying is true, so that's what that made me think of. But I don't know, what about you?
Do you think that, because this is sort of where I would fall into, because again, like we haven't seen past time travel, it would be difficult. Do you think there's any way Vegapunk could have found out somehow, maybe not necessarily from York, but like figured out, had some kind of mechanism in place to be able to figure out that some part of the Mother Flame was stolen and realized it, and thus was able to make these sorts of preparations.
Honestly, I like that explanation better than the time travel explanation, because if traveling into the future doesn't really create any kind of inconsistencies and time loops or whatever, but traveling to the past, I feel like I would have a problem within the story, right?
Yeah.
Because then, like, why not travel to the
create time loops?
Exactly. Yeah, like, why not travel to the start of the Void Century or whatever and prevent, like, you know, the ancient kingdom from falling or something, right? Like, so I really hope we don't get any time traveling into the past. I like that he was able to just, like, logic his way and reason, like, what was happening based off of, like, him realizing maybe that a part of the flame had been stolen. That's pretty cool.
Well, while we're on time travel really quick, what do you guys think about Toki using her ability to launch some of the Roger pirates into the future? I guess there's two questions there. Why didn't she, if they knew they were too early? And maybe she did. Do you expect any of them to show up at some point in the story?
That's a great fucking question.
That'd be kind of crazy. In a good way.
I think the simplest explanation is, okay, here's, I'm going to give like a meta explanation and then maybe an in-story explanation. I think the meta explanation is that if she sends the Roger Pirates into the future, then there is no current story, right? Because then there's no role for Luffy to fill. There's like, because Roger is there, right? So that's like the meta kind of explanation, right? Why, as to why Oda would not have written that into his story. As to why Toki would not have, like, if there's an in-story reason as to why she wouldn't have done that, maybe, you know, maybe Roger just didn't want to, right? Maybe he was just like, look, it clearly wasn't my time. I wasn't meant to be the person to do this, but I can inspire the next generation. I don't know. That's off the top of my head what I can think of. But
I'm really with you on the second explanation. And maybe this is just because I'm getting older and, like, basically everywhere I look as I get, like, closer to the end of my track career, especially with some of this long COVID stuff, it's just, you know, it's, it could be here, right? And everywhere I look, I see themes about generational shifts. And it makes me think about, how do I do this in a way that is cute, right? Like, you know, I don't, like, people dying, I don't even think dying the hair is that cute, but, like, you know, oh, people, you know, putting in fake hair because they're afraid to get old. If you've looked at Tom Brady and his Instagram at any point in the last, you know, 5 years, you start seeing all these, like, fake jaw lines. I think we already talked once about his hairline going backwards and then coming forwards. And I think there's really something to be said for trying to accept aging and generational shit. Yu Yu Hakusho is another one that I start seeing it. It's something to be said for, like, accepting aging and generational shifts. Like, that's the whole thing that corrupted Toguro in Yu Yu Hakusho, was not being able to let go of who you are when you're young and powerful, even though it's a natural thing to eventually grow old, die, lose your power. And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, we'll get to the end of this chapter and we'll see Rayleigh for a second, everything we've seen with Roger and them there for them. I think it's really important to say it wasn't our time. We don't just want to go and jump into the future to whenever all this crazy stuff is supposed to happen.
Yeah,
we were here now, and that's beautiful, and we accept that. And, you know, it was time for Roger to pass when it was time to pass. So I think most likely didn't send anyone to the future either.
Yeah, and look how Wano changed in the time that the, like, with all the scabbards and Odin gone, how the country completely fell into chaos and fell apart, right? Who, if Roger just up and went, you know, 17, 20 years into the future or whatever, who's to say that during that time the world government would not have been able to shape the world into their own image, because there is no great pirate age that Roger is called for, that, you know.
Yeah, but also true, right? Yeah, they would have just gone ahead and done whatever they want. Yeah, the world could have been a lot worse. But I think, you know, when we go to there, you go to the end of the chapter, and, you know, what Rayleigh ends up saying, the thrill is theirs to seek now. He's talking about, don't take it away from the youngsters. That's what they didn't want to do, and that's exactly what you're asking if they would have done, right?
For sure. Yeah. So what else happened this chapter, Jordan?
Getting back, finding back where I was, So in her frenzy, York manages to realize where the broadcast snail is. "I've worked out where the snail is," she says. "It's without a doubt. I'm a Vegapunk too. The snail is in the Fabrio Stratum and the Iron Giant is guarding it."
The Iron Giant again. I
Why are you
love
silent so much about the Iron Giant, bro?
No, I love that we're getting in the Iron Giant involved into like the Egghead Island plot, because I have a question for you. Do you think the Iron Giant was a part of Joy Boy's crew? Because I feel like that is something that I've seen a lot on like Reddit and stuff, people speculating that Zernisha and the Iron Giant were both a part of his crew.
I have seen that a lot. I do think it's interesting, but I think as time goes on and I learn more about technology, I feel less and less likely to believe that it's true. I feel like I'm becoming more compelled to feel like there were a number of allies that Joy Boy had across the world, and that the Iron Giant, Zunisha, etc., might have been some of them. But the idea that like a giant walking, a giant elephant that's like wandering around the sea all the time is actually part of his crew seems hard to get behind. I think that the Iron Giant feels, again, we've seen like the sorry Joy Boy, but it feels because they're more like technology. Well, you know, the Iron Giant's not even, well, Zunisha's not technology, but it was kind of like a robot, right?
And Zunisha or the giant?
The giant.
Yeah, well, the giant I could see being like some technological creation, right? Like that's not a stretch. I think Zunisha is very clearly like an organic living thing.
Maybe a gigantification experiment that has been taken absolutely to its max.
Maybe it could just be some like lost species or something like that that no longer exists. Or
bro, if there were 100 of those as a lost species in the world, imagine 100 Zunishas running around the world, bro.
Hey, I mean, Jack nearly took out Zunisha, right? If Momo hadn't like commanded it to attack, like they were saying, Zunisha might have fallen into the ocean. I don't know. It could also just be a random thing where Oda is like, "Hey, I want to make this island that is literally and like a massive, you know, just to satisfy his curiosity." Maybe
yeah,
it's not,
yeah,
a
yeah.
Right? Or his creativity, not curiosity.
What do you think? A part of his crew or what?
I think so. I mean, when I think of allies of Joy Boy, I think of, so with the Straw Hat Pirates, right? As we're sailing around the world, we see that all of these races and species that are historically discriminated against, whether that be the fishmen, whether that be the dwarves, whether that be the minks, like all of these, they're all connected to the ancient kingdom in some way, right? And I think that's meaningful, because I think it's something that Oda is trying to communicate about the philosophy of the ancient kingdom overall. And I think in the same way that Luffy has made those allies with those kinds of races across the world, that's what I would expect the allies of Joy Boy to always also be. It wouldn't surprise me at all if, let's say, Zunisha was something like Joy Boy's ship, right? And then he's like, you know, as they were about to leave, he was like, "Oh, you know, protect the minks," or something like that, right? If kind of like how Kuma got, you know, how Kuma got his last order programmed into him by Vegapunk in order to protect the Straw Hat ship.
Right.
Maybe the Iron Giant, or like maybe the Iron Giant got like some final order from Joy Boy to be like, you know, attack the Marijuas, you know, if this event ever happens or something. I don't know, right? But I would say I expect them to be part of his crew, but I could definitely see that.
It could have too just been the Iron Giant like attacked on whatever orders that it had, and then it failed, and that's why he was apologizing, right? And it wasn't necessarily about betraying Joy Boy or anything like that. What I find really interesting is the idea that, I believe it was a Joy Boy Theories video a while ago, suggesting that every kind of technology we've seen in the One Piece world to this point is sort of a lesser version of a sort of technology we've seen in the past. So, for example, we saw cloning that looks a certain way and has not necessarily been that good, and we saw a really strong version, and there's probably like some crazy perfect version of cloning in the past that could have been passed down. I think we talked about the sun last week. you know, that's sort of where I see the Zunisha potentially being a gigantification experiment that ended up being that was like potentially much more successful. And I kind of wonder when it comes to things like the Iron Giant and the different allies of Joy Boy, this is in response to like when you talk about how what the ancient kingdom looked like with all these different types of people, minks, fishmen, etc. There's really a part of me that's wondering how many of these people or races, species, etc., came from some sort of genetic modification. The idea that there are people who are just humanoid living at the bottom of the ocean seems ridiculous and doesn't seem like something that would just naturally happen, especially given that we know that the rise in the oceans was something that was unnatural.
Right, but I mean, just because the ocean's level rose, it doesn't mean that there weren't oceans before, right? Like, I think the oceans existed in the past. It was just that, like, also, we know that they said Joy Boy was the first pirate, right? I feel like this probably preceded, this had to have preceded the rise in water during the Void Century, because I think Joy Boy was defeated at the start of the Void Century, right? So,
that's true, there but clearly don't was. Don't you think fishmen, particularly that minks, seem like unnatural beings to exist? Like, certainly they feasibly could be, given that we know that there's genetic modification and things like that, and that the science of the Void Century is so like unimaginably more advanced. Doesn't that seem like the kind of thing someone might have wanted to create?
One argument, quickly, Abraham, to credit Jordan, is that the fishmen, like, you have humans all over the world, right? So humans have populated the earth. Fishmen don't appear to have done that. You know, if they have a history as long as humanity in the One Piece world, don't you think they would be found in all the oceans?
So I will say, to respond to that, the reason why they only populate Fishman Island is because that's the only place where light reaches the seafloor, right? Because of the Eve tree or whatever, right? So they can't just like pop that's why they live in Fishman Island, right? It's specifically stated for that reason. So I think that's a good enough explanation for why they only live there. As for what you were saying, Jordan, about why all of these how all of these crazy different creatures that exist in the real world, like why they're like, I think this is just, again, Oda's creativity. And you could argue that this is like evolution, right? Like, maybe if we want to talk about fishmen, you know, you had some, if you want to science it, like you had some fish that maybe eventually evolved lungs as well as gills. And I like, you know, he also loves taking stuff from like mythology. We know that, right? He has, there are like real life, not just like dragon devil fruits, but like real dragons in the series. We have like, all sorts of just zany animals and species. Like, I don't think this is, I think if all of the, if you're going, if we're going to get to the point where all of these humanoid species or all of this like crazy kind of species diversity that we see in the One Piece world is just due to tech, like that just feels like this is a different story than the one we've had. Like, this is just, it is becoming like a sci-fi story, which I don't think One Piece is.
You don't, but the exact point Vegapunk is making is that technology is responsible for so much of this. I don't think it would necessarily, to me, there, what I think is going to happen over the course of the rest of One Piece story as we come to, you know, the last however couple hundred chapters, is there will be reveals that shift the One Piece world on its head. I think there's some language, I mean, Hikurikaesu is like some language that you see all the time about like, it'll turn the world on its head, right? Like, that is something you see in the, in One Piece that actually comes up. And I think that when we talk about this, yeah, One Piece isn't a sci-fi, but actually we have all the science. And actually Vegapunk is suggesting that 800 years ago, the science was substantially more advanced than what we have now. I think there's going to be some kind of reveal about exactly how this science was used that changes how we understand everything. I don't think it necessarily makes One Piece a sci-fi story, especially because I feel like sci-fi also just has, you know, it just has certain like benchmarks, things like that. But there has to be some, you know, as we get an explanation for what, where powers in this world come from, why, like why things are the way they are, I'm really beginning to feel like technology is going to be a bigger and bigger explanation for that. Even the world government, Kaido and King, we saw them going through scientific, like, different kinds of scientific experimentation.
Right. And the result of that was the Seraphim, right? But like that have like
Kaido and King?
Lunarian. Yeah, I mean, I would assume that the experiments that they did on King led to the Lunarians, because the Lunarians have, or not the Lunarians, the Seraphim, because the Seraphim have Lunarian DNA in them, right? Like that's just what I've always assumed. But I just wanna, I'm not trying to, I agree that the technological advancements in the past are going to play an important role in the future. But I think that's going to take the form of these ancient weapons. I think that's going to take the form of maybe, like we were talking about, oh, you know, this small part of the Mother Flame was able to do this much, right? What could, like, you know, but I don't think that's going to necessarily take the form of, oh, all of these species that just like exist in like that happening. I personally think there's a 0% chance. Like
Oh, come
I
on,
would
man,
put
bro.
money.
Come on, man. Don't be putting
There's no
0%
way.
on it, bro.
I bro,
Okay,
I
give me
just
odds. Give me odds. Give me odds. You said
how much
0%. Give
money?
me odds.
I'll give you 50 to 1 odds
Yeah,
that we
so I
that
bet
we
$1, you pay me 50.
sure.
Yeah,
That
let's bet. I bet you $1, 50-1 odds, that
okay.
there are gonna be scientific explanation for all the things like the fishmen and or minks.
I want no. First of all, I want to make something very clear, because one thing that I've learned from talking to you is that sometimes you like to make these ambiguous. What I'm saying there's a 0% chance of is that we find out, oh, stuff like fishmen, they were actually like made through like genetic like modifications and clones, and or minks, they were made through like that they're not
Offer me the
natural
bet.
DNA.
Offer me the bet right now. Because I, yeah,
That's
I,
no, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm
yeah.
saying. That's
So
what I'm saying.
yeah.
There's a 0% chance of.
I believe that fishmen are an unnatural, fishmen, minks probably too, are an unnatural phenomenon created by scientific
Yeah,
experimentation,
you sound like a racist. You sound like a celestial dragon.
whatever.
I mean, fishermen and these minks are unnatural
All right, how about this? I think there's more than a 0% chance that in the world of One Piece, I think it more than a 0% chance in the world of One Piece. And I would not bet you money on this straight up. So I'm not necessarily like, it is not necessarily that I think it is more likely than not, but I think it's an interesting, completely plausible scenario. And I think there's a lot of value in a 50-1 odds bet. So if you give me 50-1 odds, I bet you $1.
You got it. It's specifically about what I said about you talking about the fishmen and the minks and whatnot, them being these, you know, essentially like artificial creations.
Yes, exactly. Now I'm betting $1 on this at 50-1 odds. So
That's fine.
if
That's
anyone who
fine.
doesn't know how betting works, who's listening to this, I bet $1, and
No.
if I win, Abraham gives me $50. That is how certain he is about this.
It's ludicrous. Yeah.
I also want to be clear, it's not that I think that this is more likely than not. What I believe is that this is a completely plausible and completely could be the case, interesting discussion. And so at 50-1 odds, I really have my expected value is higher than zero.
I
That's
mean, you're not risking anything. You're betting $1, so who cares?
yeah. Bro, why you want me to bet $10 at 50-1?
We're good.
All right, yes, thank you. All right, yeah, thank you. You made my point. Okay. As we close the chapter, Vegapunk reflects that only one group knew the entire lost history of humanity, the Pirate King and his crew. As we cut to a very drunk Rayleigh, and honestly, I'm gonna say for the listeners, we've got a lot to say about the cuts to different characters in the chapters, so we decided to hold off and do all of them in a few weeks when Vegapunk finishes reveal. We're not gonna get into this too much. Why, Vegapunk asks, would they fade away without telling a soul? Why didn't they act? Rayleigh says, "The thrill is theirs to seek now, Roger." And as he finishes his cup of liquor and passes out, we get a notification for a break next week and the epithet to end the chapter, "Those who knew the truth just laughed." And I liked the ending. It was nice to see Rayleigh passing out. I really wonder what is so hilarious and what made them laugh so much talking to Joy Boy in that moment. You like this
That's the
chapter here?
mystery.
Yeah,
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought, I'll be honest, I thought this chapter was a bit of a slow burn because there was nothing I thought that was groundbreaking that was revealed in this week. I do I that is the big question at the end though, you know, what was it that made them? I've yet to hear a good theory to explain why they laughed. And
Well,
I don't think we're going to
come
find
by
out
at
for a while.
least.
We're not, probably not going to find out the answer to that until we get two left here.
Bro, it's at the bottom of Emmy's lobby. That's obviously funny because the government has that
Get out of here.
here. Come back next week, everyone, for our predictions for 1117. And also, we're not doing S
17.
class and F class this week. From this point forward, we'll be doing those segments in the weeks that we don't have any chapters. So come back for our reviews of the theories we find on the internet. But now it's time to jump into awards show where we give awards to noteworthy moments you might have missed. Abraham, what's your award this week?
My award is the Imposter Syndrome Award. Do you know what Imposter Syndrome is, Jordan?
I do, but why don't you let everyone know just for us?
Yeah. So Imposter Syndrome is this feeling that people get sometimes that they're inadequate, essentially, that they don't belong wherever, like maybe you don't feel like you're as good as your coworkers or your classmates or whatever. And you feel like you're an imposter,
Or
right?
you're at the split consciousness, some might say. Go
Yeah, exactly. So
on.
the person who wins this award for me is York, right? I think it's pretty obvious, you know. She just says randomly at some point in this chapter that she's like, I'm a Vegapunk too, right? But I didn't just give it to her because she said that this chapter. I gave it to her because in 11:13, she felt the need to remind us
Whoa.
as well that she was also, yeah, I double checked because I was like, I'm pretty sure this.
Wait,
She has said this before. In four chapters ago, she or three chapters ago, she also was like, I'm a Vegapunk too. For some reason,
right.
York feels the need to keep reminding us that she's also a Vegapunk. Like we need convincing. And so she's gonna win my imposter syndrome award.
Well, that's funny, man, because I started, well, as you said, we're talking about it, the difference of consciousnesses. I was like, let me go look at all the different Vegapunks. So you got Stella Vegapunk, obviously the original. You got Shaka, the smartest. You got Lilith, the baddest. You got one of these is the cutest. One of these is a cool robot. And one of them is like the nicest or something. I don't know. York is definitely just the one that I'm just like, what do you bring to the table? Like, what do you bring to the table? And she is a Vegapunk, but I don't know what she brings to the table. I understand why she has imposter syndrome.
What's your award? What award are you giving out this week?
The award I have this week is the Man of Culture Award going to Akainu because look at this man on that cigar, bro. Like, he looked like the most interesting man in the world from the Dos Equis commercials. This
Yeah.
dude is not just smoking a cigar. He's like smoking while he's smoking a cigar. He's his hands turning into magma, smoking a cigar. He got smoke coming out of his mouth, going behind him with his cool
Yep.
little flower shirt on. Akainu looks like a man of culture, and while he's certainly not my favorite character because he's kind of a bad guy, I gotta give him this award.
I got you. I feel that's a no, that is a cold picture.
Is there an equivalent to Cuba in the One Piece world, do you think? Well, what kind of
Cuba.
cigars is Akainu smoking?
Ah,
Ooh.
man.
What would the equivalent? Hold on, write this down for One Piece. Would you rather's or hypotheticals, like doing what countries, like equivalent of different countries in the One Piece world?
Who rolls a mean cigar? Who would? Man, I feel like, you know what? I
They
was gonna say
got.
maybe Mock Town, maybe Mock Town. I don't know. I feel like they smoke over there.
We know that Robin is gonna be a Latina actress in the live action, so I could see potentially maybe a little O'Hara is where we get some people smoking
That
cigars.
Yeah, those are limited edition cigars then. They don't make them anymore.
Yeah,
Mind who made sure of that?
Brockeye, he showed up there. He was like, I'm gonna take this. He's like, I really wanted to come on this Buster call so I could learn how to roll these cigars and then destroy this place so I'm the only ones that can get him, which honestly that would be pretty on par for a guy like him. So
Yeah.
now we'll do some would you rathers. It's time for One Piece Would You Rather, our newest segment. It's not even our newest segment anymore. We didn't take that out of the read. We have a new segment coming for you in a second after this. But this is the segment where we answer hypotheticals like we're in the One Piece world. Alex, what do you have for us today?
This week's is a teaser for the next segment we're about to hop into. And it's would you rather be part of Kaido's crew or a Big Mom pirate?
You
Abraham,
want
what
me
do you
to go
think?
first? You want me to go first? Okay. I think the answer is easy, that I would much rather be a pirate on Big Mom's crew than Kaido's crew.
Bro, come
We
on.
straight up
Why, bro?
know
Why?
what?
Why,
Why?
bro? Why?
Bro, people on Kaido's crew literally plot on each other's downfall, because the way you move up in rankings is by like killing or beating the person who's above you. I'm fine. I'm fine being a Alex said you have to be a Big Mom kid. I'm fine coming from Big Mom. That's there's some people who have ugly moms. That's fine. I'm okay having an ugly mom. I'm not okay with having to look over my shoulder because I'm worried that five people are trying to jump me to take my spot in line.
But so you're also gonna get married off to whoever Big Mom wants, and if you don't get married to them, then she's gonna come after you, kill you, take your lifespan. You gotta be
That's fine.
offering your lifespan. That's a little scary all the time.
No. Her kids don't off. She takes that from the citizens of Whole Cake Island.
Do they not count as that? Do they not do that themselves? It's only the
I don't
citizens?
believe so. I think it's only the regular citizens of Whole Cake Island that give up their lifespan voluntarily.
All right, well, let's be clear. You also gonna be eating all these cookies and candy and whatever all the time, and that,
That's okay.
bro. You're gonna put on like 500 lbs, bro. Like whatever abs you thought you were trying to get, you're not getting those abs.
But
And
let me tell
Kai,
you something. Yeah, go ahead. No,
no,
go ahead.
no. Tell me something. Tell me something first. I want you to tell me something.
I might be eating like sweets and cookies and cake and stuff like that, but you're gonna be given some random ass smile fruit, and it's like a 50-50 chance that you, when you eat it, whether or not you even get any powers. And even on the off chance that you get any powers, it's probably gonna be some trash ass power, like you have a zebra head in your crotch. Like,
Hey,
I would rather eat sweets than have that happen to me too.
we listen. Hey, we can still figure out how to get freaky with the zebra head and the crotch. Now, we can still figure out how to get freaky with the zebra head and the crotch. I don't, listen. That's another thing that can lick some things. Okay, that's another thing that can lick some things. So we're gonna have a perfectly good time. Plus, everyone around you is also dealing with that. So if everyone around you is dealing with that, it's going to become a societal norm that you don't really have to feel particularly bothered by.
That's
But
crazy.
I'm saying they're not like the women are not going to be like, oh, you have like a zebra head in your crotch, because they probably got like like a cow udder on their back or something.
And you like that? You like that,
I'm
Jordan?
not saying I like that. I'm saying I'm going to get used to
I'm
it.
saying what I'll
Oh,
tell you
hold
is,
up. What was Kaido's crew doing before the raid?
they were drinking and messing around.
Yeah, man, bro, they're having a good time. They're having a good time.
Bro.
They were partying. Listen, like you said, you're okay just being at the bottom. You don't need to be at the top. You don't need to be working, fighting hard, all these things. I'm cool just hanging out. I don't need to be out here plotting everyone else's downfall. That's
No, but you're gonna get jumped, bro.
For the ambitious people, bro. That's for the ambitious people. I'm just gonna be down here having my abs look right in this almost shirtless, crazy, leather suit, using my zebra head
Way.
to be able to doubly pleasure whatever lovely women I'm meeting at this at the music festivals that we're going to all day.
Bro. It's so much. Also, let me just say one thing real quick to close this out. All of the women that Big Mom sets her kids up with are bad. Like Charlotte, I guess these are her daughters, but like Charlotte Praline, who she hooked up with Aladdin. Charlotte Praline was bad. Pudding was bad. Like you're gonna get some. There's some baddie that I'm sure that I feel like I'm gonna get if I'm one of Big Mom's kids. That's all I gotta say about that.
I'm not crazy about Charlotte Praline, but I will say
She was a baddie.
if you set me up with smoothie, I wouldn't have any complaints. I'll give
Exactly. Exactly. You climb trees, huh? You climb trees, Jordan?
What's
Okay.
next, Abraham?
Yeah, it's time. This is actually our newest segment. It's time for
Yes.
us to introduce a new segment to you all called the One Piece Draft. So over the next couple of episodes, Jordan and I will each be drafting a group of five pirates with the goal of building a crew that can find the One Piece. That is the goal. Alex, can you give us the rules of this draft?
Yeah, it's going to be really straightforward. Each week, we'll alternate between the two of you who gets to pick first. Each pick has to consist of a pirate and a cannon crew they were a part of. You're not allowed to pick any pirates who have already been to Laugh Tale. And once a crew has been named, it is off limits for the rest of the draft.
Wait, wait,
Abraham,
wait,
you're
wait.
up.
Hold up, hold up, hold up. What happened to my handicap?
What's your handicap?
What happened to my
You want to
handicap?
go second the
I was gonna
entire
bust
time?
Abraham even going second the whole time.
Jordan,
I thought I was
you're
gonna
gonna
bust
get
him like
washed. You're gonna get
that.
washed,
I'm gonna
bro.
let him choose five people first and still he was gonna get bust.
Jordan, you're gonna get washed. You want me to go ahead, Alex? Can I go ahead?
Well, why don't let's start here. I mean, Abraham might just win on the first pick. So let's see what happens this week, and we'll revisit next week. How about that?
Well, we'll
Yeah,
see.
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I thought I spent a long time thinking about who I was going back and forth essentially between two characters that I wanted to pick. And it
I'm
was
probably gonna pick
between,
the other one, I bet. So go ahead.
huh?
I said I'm probably gonna pick the other one, I bet. So go
You
ahead.
can't. They're on the same crew. It was between Nami and
Oh.
Robin. And the person that I'm taking with my first pick is actually Robin from the Straw Hat Pirates. That's my first pick. You need, if the goal is to get to Laugh Tale, the goal is to find the One Piece, you have to be able to interpret the poneglyphs. And so I need someone on my crew who can do so. I'm taking Robin and I'm closing off the Straw Hats. You can't take any Straw Hats now.
Bro, how in the world are you starting this draft? This is how I knew I was gonna be able to. But
No, go ahead.
how in the world are you starting with Robin?
Go ahead.
Like, how in the world are you gonna build a crew that even has the strength to conquer the oceans?
Because I got my other picks. Bro, you don't need to worry about what I'm doing. Just worry about what you're doing, and you're gonna see in 4 to 5 weeks this massive L that you're gonna take. Go ahead.
All right, then we're starting off with Shanks, my dog.
You got Shanks. There you
My
go. That's
boy,
good.
who has not only been to very close to Laugh Tale and has some sense of idea of where it is, who we've seen use language that demonstrates that he feels like it is time to claim the One Piece. So we feel like he has some sense of ability to actually get there. Who we have seen essentially one shot, one of the supernovas who was a part of taking down Big Mom and Kaido. Listen, I'm not
You're
saying being able to
speculating.
read the
You're
poneglyph doesn't.
speculating. He doesn't have any way to interpret the poneglyphs.
I'm not saying that being able to get to the poneglyphs, that read the poneglyphs does not matter. But I'm saying we get a strong crew, we're gonna figure that out. We're gonna figure
Okay, that's fine.
we're gonna get a
I
strong
can
crew.
already tell.
We're
Look,
gonna
go
get
ahead.
around this ocean and we're gonna figure that out.
I'll
I'm gonna
tell you
start with
this.
some strength. I wanna make sure that the characters I have the capacity.
I'll tell you this. You will, I, it depending on who you pick with your next pick, you can lose the whole draft
Bro,
next week on your second pick. On your second
I hope our crews run up on each other. I hope our
pick.
crews run up on each other because your crew is get. What was the language? I only remember the Japanese. It was Zenmetsu, but like, what was it about what was the language about what happened to the kid pirates? Again, you remember what happened? What language that was?
Bro. I haven't picked my strong characters yet. You're gonna end up, you could draft people like Shanks, Kaido, Big Mom. You can have the strongest crew, and you're literally never gonna be able to get from one island to the next. You're not. Like, you need, just like
Bro,
Luffy says in,
listen,
just
the
like
Rock
Luffy says in
Pirates.
Arlong Park, just like he says in Arlong Park, that I need crewmates that are skilled at the things that I'm not skilled at. I'm not gonna have five yoked characters. I'm gonna have some characters. And first of all, Robin can throw hands. She's obviously not a top tier fighter by any means, but she can definitely throw hands. And she has the single most important skill that is needed to find the One Piece, which is the ability to interpret the pony glyphs.
This man, like this man just doesn't need, like, it's like, you're gonna let me have two strong characters before you get your one.
You
because
can
I
go
am
ahead.
Taking a strong character. I'll be able to get the Pongos, don't you worry, but you still have to be able to make sure your crew is able to sail the seas freely for a long period of time and make sure you get there. I'm gonna have
I'll
some
be
people
fine.
on here. Our crew show up against one another, you're getting bust 100% of the
No.
Time.
It's
You're gonna
light.
be
It'll be light work. I already know that this is based off of you. What you're saying about your next pick, you're gonna lose the draft on your next pick. But it's all right.
Yeah, we'll see. Right. You definitely have a good idea of who I might be choosing. What were you about to say, Alex?
Yeah, I was gonna say yeah. Before we move on, I want to say we'd love to review some 5-person crews from the listeners. So if you can reach out to us on YouTube or Twitter.
Yeah.
We'll get a couple, put those head to head as well after we're done with this draft. I think it's going to be a great conversation.
For sure. For sure.
Well,
I want to talk about what's going on in the real world now. It's
time
for culture time. I don't know how much you follow the NBA, Jordan, but there's a draft pick that's drawing a lot of headlines, pulling a lot of scouts. His name is Bronny James, also known as LeBron James Jr. So LeBron's son is entering the NBA draft. He played 1 year at USC this last year. He actually had a heart attack during the season last year that he was able to recover from and still play for part of the season. But he had a pretty underwhelming season at USC, which is also not really that well known for its basketball program. A lot of people are speculating that if he was not LeBron's son, that he would not even be drafted in the NBA draft. And that even as it stands now, that he'll be like a second round pick at best. Most people do not expect him to be taken in the first round. And there is a real chance that he also goes undrafted. So what do you think about this idea of LeBron's son entering the NBA and the potential? I should also say this real quick, that LeBron has said in the past that it's one of his goals to play with his son, that's a dream that he has. And so there's speculation that some teams may draft Bronny earlier than they normally would, because they think that drafting Bronny will also bring LeBron James onto their team. So what do you think about this idea about maybe Bronny's draft stock improving due to who his father is?
Bro, I just feel like LeBron, I want an RDC World video about how LeBron right now is calling, like, if the Dallas Mavericks had not made it to the NBA Finals, if they had gotten knocked out by the Timberwolves or knocked out in against the Thunder. I wanted an RDC World video of LeBron, how LeBron was calling Mark Cuban, hey, y'all gonna draft Bronny? Y'all gonna draft Bronny? Draft Bronny, I'm coming down there. So he can try and get another team as a chance of winning a championship by using his son as an excuse to say, hey, if you draft my son, I'm going to come down there. So I honestly think that that's one of the more hilarious things, is definitely someone will take a shot on him for the opportunity to get LeBron on their team. But then what I'm interested in is, like, when Bronny's out there, like, not playing and LeBron is an angry dad, like, what's going to happen?
Yeah. So, well, I guess I wanted to more get your perspective about this from an athlete, though, because I do think that's kind of funny. But Bronny being drafted obviously means that there's going to be a player. Like, and I'm not saying Bronny doesn't deserve to be drafted, because I'm not a draft scout. I don't know. But a lot of people have said that if it wasn't for his name, that he wouldn't have been a McDonald's All-American in high school, and that he would not be considered even a second round pick in this year's draft. So what about the idea that there's going to be someone who doesn't get drafted because of who Bronny's father is? And I guess the idea that he's taking away an opportunity from someone else due to this nepotism. Like, as an athlete, do you think that's just like par for the course? You know, that's what, or like, does that bother you?
I think that what's difficult is, in a lot of ways, there's no other situation that's similar to this. This would not be a story if it was, even like Dwayne Wade's son, right? Like Dwayne Wade's son would not be this much of a story. I don't know who other, just naming other basketball players who are not literally one of potentially the best, definitely one of the best two basketball players of all time, and one of, and still playing really well in his advanced age. I think the thing is, in a lot of sports, like when you're asking a track athlete, right? And so I've been in a world that has been patently unfair towards the athletes, where for many years in this sport, I've been showing up at meets against guys who I've been better than and been beating, and they've just been getting paid more money than me just because they were better in like college, and that's the way things happen to work. But I think that still overall, sports is one of the places that nepotism is not necessarily as strong as it is basically everywhere else in life. Like essentially college, like other jobs, basically people daddy calls a friend all the time. And
I
this is
agree.
honestly like the first example we're seeing of someone being able to do that in the NBA. And I don't think it's the kind of thing that's actually going to be able to happen in basically any other situation.
Yeah, no, I agree that this is a very unique situation that we have on our hands here, but I do think I don't love the idea that someone is losing an op. I hate actually I strongly dislike the idea that someone is losing out on an opportunity, because there are hundreds of kids, you know, whose dream it is, you know, that are perfectly qualified, but whose dream it is to make it into the NBA. And being undrafted makes that extra, like, a lot harder. And I'm not saying this is Bronny's fault, because you can't control who your father is. It's not LeBron's fault necessarily, right? Because, you know, it's not his fault that he's still great and is still playing in the league. I just, you know,
But you know what, Ben?
I don't like the idea that there's a stacked deck here, right? Like, it's not fair.
And if you can play, though, they'll find you, right? Like, I just went down and looked at the 2015 NBA draft, and the number of, if you go to the second round, even at the end of the first round, true pick 26 never played a game in the NBA. You go to the second round, you got like, 15, like half of the second round never plays a game in the NBA if you're drafted. So on one hand, yes, Bronny is taking an opportunity from someone, but also whoever has an opportunity to play in the NBA, like it's not necessarily fair. I think it's also life, and I think it's also this is not a shift towards a much stronger sense of nepotism in the NBA in terms of the number of players who go there. And a lot of the guys who end up being drafted towards the end of that second round, even in the middle of the second round, already don't make the league even for a game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This is not a trend that's going to consistently happen. I will say, you know Giannis, right? Giannis
Of
Antetokounmpo.
course. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
he
bro,
plays
Giannis
for
got his
Milwaukee.
brothers. He got his brothers a
Exactly.
lot
That's what I
of
was going to
money.
say, though, right? His brother Thanasis, people clown on him as like the worst player in the NBA.
Right.
But this man is guaranteed a roster spot on Milwaukee as long as his brother is on the team. Right. And again, that's a roster spot that's not going to someone else. So, like, you know,
Right.
I love Giannis. I don't, and, you know, I res I actually kind of, I can't even be mad at him for doing that, because I feel like if it was me in that situation, like, yeah, I would hold it down for my brother. You know, I'd be like, yeah, you know, he's like the right size. You know, it's not like he's completely useless on the court. Right. And if I can help bring someone else up, like, if I'm going to take advantage of that. But I guess as a neutral outside observer, I still don't love that happens, you know?
Bro, I'm not. I just looked up the NASA's stats. How many
Bro.
points? No, you said this man is not completely useless. He
Well, he plays like a minute and a half a game. So, you know,
played.
it's like,
It's true. He played in 34 games this year. He averaged 4.6 minutes a game. How many
yeah.
points do you think he had per game in that 4.6 minutes?
I'm gonna say 1.3.
0.9.
That was close. That was close.
0.9. And he's coming in to play against GPA squad players too. Like, he's basically only coming in when GPA squad is in the game. And he's scoring 0.9 points a game against
Yep.
GPA squad. So
Yeah. That's how it be. I agree. That's life. It is life. Life isn't always fair, but you know, it is what it is.
Alex,
Okay.
what's next?
Yeah, for the last segment, Jenna McCurdy, who kind of re-entered the zeitgeist about a year and a
Jeanette,
half.
Alex, it's Jeanette.
Mrs. McCurdy. Anyway, for those who don't know, she was a childhood Nickelodeon star. Wrote a book in late 2022, I'm Glad My Mom Died. She's been on a little bit of an interview tour. And in those tours, she's really been evangelizing renting over home ownership. She did own a home for 3 years, but at this point says she hated it and is much happier to have a landlord who she can call for any issues around the house that she faces. For some context for this conversation, Abraham, you've been renting recently, and Jordan, you've owned a home for a little bit of time. Is she onto something, or is she just an out of touch celebrity?
Can I go first on this one, Abraham? Can I
Yeah,
go
go
first?
ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Because obviously, I've owned a house for about a year. Let me tell you what happened in this house over the course of the first year that I lived here. We realized that there was a rat den under my front porch. It wasn't like a small little rat den. They were having birthday parties and bar mitzvahs and quinceañeras and weddings and parties under my front porch. So we had to take off the whole front porch. That cost a bunch of money, put concrete down so they couldn't get in. In the period that we had the front porch off, there was a torrential downpour. Then my basement flooded because of that torrential downpour. Now I have to pay someone to clean that up. And then I have to pay $8,000 to like remediate the mold that has grown because of it. There are things that I really appreciate about home ownership. I like knowing where I'm going to live next year. I like knowing about what the cost of my like monthly payment is going to be every month. I feel more invested in the place that I live. I feel like excited about it. There are things that and Homegirl is definitely on to something, and that not dealing with all of this, like I also felt much more free in a certain way that I did before I owned a home and was just very solidly here. How's that land for you, Abraham?
Yeah, I think like most things in life, it's all about context, right? Because I moved out of my parents' house in 2018. I've been renting ever since, right? And for me, renting has been, I think, the financially responsible decision to make, but that is not necessarily the case for everyone. I was actually listening to a podcast episode from the New York Times, like the daily podcast that they do. This was like months and months ago, where they talked about, renting versus buying, because there's a lot of millennials nowadays who are at that age where, everyone wants to own a house to some degree, right? There's this, it's comforting, like you said, to not have to be subject to the whims of a landlord. I had my the landlord at the place I was living at last, like 2 years ago. I moved because they tried to bump my rent up $400 a month when I tried to renew, right? And so I said, I don't need to live here. I can move somewhere else. And so I did. But moving is obviously inconvenient. It was a hassle,
Hate moving.
a whole lot of other stuff. But for me, I think the way that I think about it is that there's a lot of sunk costs when it comes to owning a home, when it comes to buying a home. Obviously, you have the down payment that you have to put on your home, right? But then what I've also been told is, I can't remember the exact name of the fee, but it might be like a closing fee or something like that,
Yeah, closing
where
costs,
it's
yeah.
like a fee that technically the seller pays, but then the seller pushes off essentially into the price of the house. So essentially you pay it as the buyer. Like there are and it's always like 6% or whatever of the value of the home.
Yeah, there's stuff like that. Yeah. It's that's the real
Like
fees. Yeah, yeah.
there are those like kind of sunk costs that are always going to be there when you buy a house, right? So if you're moving, let's say you're like, I can't afford the house that I want to live in for the rest of my life right now. Like, I have my dream home, but it's out of my budget. So I'm going to buy this other house, live here for like 5 years, and then move once I can finally afford my dream home, right? You're paying those kinds of costs over and over and over again. And they were like, you're like that closing cost or whatever. Every single time you buy a new house, you're paying that again, right? Also, all of those maintenance fees that you were talking about that you don't have to pay as a renter are real things that you have to do as a buyer, right? So I think for me, when I not knowing where how long I was going to live in St. Louis for, whether or not I really, was going to establish my roots here long term, it wouldn't have made sense to buy a house, right? Renting has been the decision that I think I would make again if I still moved here, if I had to redo everything from the beginning. But for other people, I think the comfort of having a home to be like, I am a homeowner in and of itself is worth a certain amount of money that just depends, like depends from person to person, right? If you're just like, I'm willing to like take an L on like $50,000, because it means I have like a house.
Well, the thing
You
is, you're
know,
not
that's
taking
your personal choice.
the thing. You're not taking an L, right? Like it's you're basically passing that, putting that money in, and you will theoretically be able to liquidate your asset at some point and be able to get it back. Or like for me, for example, I live with a couple of roommates. We're finishing the basement, so I'm gonna have a friend living in the basement, and so we're now gonna be able, like, it'll actually be generating cash for me over the course of time. And then whenever I eventually sell it, or you can actually rent money against the cost of your house as the value goes up and you've paid more of the mortgage down. So you're able to have access to that through different lines of credit mechanisms, things like that. It's the place where I think to answer what you were saying is McCurdy just being a little out of touch. You know, I think for a lot of people that the financial, if you have the money for a down payment, et cetera, the yes, despite all the costs that you like go into actually keeping your house standing upright and being solid, it is in the long run, it's essentially an asset that will make it so you are able to, you have a place to live essentially for free in 30 years from now, right? Or at the very least, just for like taxes and interest that cost a lot less money plus repairs. And then you have an asset that you can also borrow against for what will eventually be, you know, $200,000-$400,000 if you end up wanting to sell on it, or end up like selling it and downsizing. So there are all of these. That's the piece that I think someone like McCurdy is not necessarily thinking about, where I'm guessing that like moving from place to place, like I'm guessing she's not in a financial position where like there's a level of stress that comes with waiting for your landlord negotiations every year. It's sort of like, yes, it might get raised, but in the grand scheme of things, that's not a particularly big issue. And I think that getting out of that position is very nice. But also, like you're saying, Abraham, it does kind of suck to just like that upfront cash, like before, you know, once I'm done with like all the stuff I want to add and things like that, and it's just kind of like going and I'm collecting rent from my roommates in the basement, like I'm gonna be in a nice place. Right now, boy, like this is, oof, it can be, it's a little stressful.
For sure. And I want to say one thing that I think a lot of people don't think about with respect to renting, because you're right, the house that you buy is an asset that's going to appreciate, that you can take loans out against. But and some people I think look at, oh, look, the value of my house increased, like I made $100,000 based off of like the house or whatever it is, how much your house appreciated in value over like the 10, 20 years or whatever that you live there. But I think the appropriate comparison is also to, if you were to take that down payment and invest it in like an index fund or something like that, right? And see how that would appreciate, because those oftentimes do just as well as the housing market, if not better, right? And it's like, it's not necessarily a, like, it's easy to look at your house and be like, look at how much money I made over
Right,
these
right,
years.
right. Yeah.
But like, it is an investment that you made, and you could have invested your money into something else if you were renting, I would
That is
say.
true. I was looking at the I was looking at I was like, man, if I would just put my whole down payment in NVIDIA. Now, obviously, you know, look, that'd be look, I was like, man, if I just put my whole down payment in NVIDIA when it was down at 100, like I like shoot, I would have $300,000 just sitting in the bank right now. Now, obviously,
Exactly.
you can't live your life that way. Like, an index
Yeah.
fund is a much smarter and more prudent decision. But, because, if you go in one stock, you could also just lose all that money. But,
Yeah.
and I, to be fair, I think that the fact that real estate is a generally very stable asset is a reason that people do it. But on the other hand, if I had put it all in NVIDIA, woo, I'd be flying back and forth to St. Louis whenever. Woo, boy. Having a good
Yeah.
time, man. But that, I think, is our show, everyone. I'm on the wrong document, my own personal document. That is all we have for time. Thank you to Alex, your friend who produced this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. And come back next Sunday to hear our predictions for chapter 1117, as well as S-class versus F-class theories. We're going to have some really good ones, because now that we're not doing it every week, we have the ability to be really selective with it. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking us, rating us, reviewing us wherever you get your podcasts. And check us on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece and on Twitter now at FWROP Pod. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks. Peace.
Take it easy.